Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right, we are back with another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. Today we have none other than Tom Wheelwright with us to talk a little bit about taxes, everyone's favorite subject here on the Real Estate Investing Club. Tom's an expert at taxes. He's the rich dad advisor to none other than Robert Kiyosaki, the rich dad, poor dad, the purple Bible we always talk about here. So Tom, I'm super excited to jump into this. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Yeah, good to be with you, Gabe.
Absolutely. I told you before we got on here, we like stories. We like to hear how people got to where they are today. I'm sure you got a good one. You are a veteran in the real estate space. So why don't you take us to the beginning? How'd you get started in real estate?
Yeah, actually, my parents were real estate investors. So I remember when we moved, I was 1 year old. I was a 1 year old. We moved from one block away to a bigger house. My parents kept the old house and rented it. Okay.
Then, OG house hack. I love it.
That's right. Then they went and they bought a couple of duplexes.
Okay.
And they literally, for their retirement, they pretty much lived off the duplex income. They turned the duplexes into triplexes.
Okay.
Right. They built out the basements, turned them into triplexes. They put a basement apartment in the home that they built on some raw land, their retirement home. They put a basement apartment in. So they, I grew up with this stuff. Fast forward to I meet Robert Kiyosaki because he hires me to be his CPA, and I'm reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. I'm going, well, yeah, this is, my dad was an entrepreneur. He's a real estate investor.
This is old news, buddy.
This is like, of course, this is how you do it. I didn't know you could do it any other way. Right. I mean, most people, this is brand new to them. For me, this is like, well, yeah, this is how you do it.
Exactly. I always say when people come on the show who have parents, you know, who are big in investing, I'm super jealous because, you know, you grow up in this environment. People like me, so many people who come on the show, we have to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that actually was the book that got me into investing, was Robert Kiyosaki's book. Great book to give you the overall example of why investing is so powerful. But man, I'm jealous. You know, your parents, they understood from the beginning. So love to hear that. So once you, you grew up, your parents were investors, buying houses, turning them into triplexes, all that stuff. At what point, what'd you graduate with? It sounds like you were a CPA, so you probably graduated with finance. And at what point did you get yourself into investing?
Well, so I did my undergraduate at University of Utah with a bachelor's of accounting. And then I did a graduate degree at the University of Texas with a master's in professional accounting with an emphasis in tax. And then I started working at Ernst & Young back when it was Ernst & Winnie, actually. And I learned,
I didn't know.
It used to be Ernst & Winnie. By the way, before that, it was Ernst & Ernst.
Interesting. I did not know that.
So there you go. Little big four CPA.
Little trivia.
So I actually got into the partnership area really quickly. I started my career in Salt Lake City. And there were really two primary industries that we worked in. One was energy, particular oil and gas mining, and the other was real estate. And so both of those, you do a lot of partnership work. Well, then I went to the national office of Ernst & Winnie, and I was in their national tax department for 3 years in their partnership group. Well, as you know, most real estate is done through partnerships. And in fact, when I was there, LLCs were just getting to be a thing. Not all states had them. We had, of course, Wyoming started them in 1977, and then states followed. But we didn't, you know, we were using limited partnerships back then. So I learned it from the partnership area, but partnerships by necess- by necessity, you end up in real estate. Then I left E&Y after I moved out to Phoenix to work in their local office here. I left to go to a Fortune 1000 company. And the reason they hired me is because they needed real estate tax expertise because they just bought a big real estate developer. And so I've always done the real estate, the tax side of real estate. I mean, I've been involved in that for 40 years. I didn't honestly get involved in the investment side until the first time I played Robert's cash flow game. And it was playing that game. And I'm going, in fact, my partner and I played the game and we go, well, this is obvious. And within 30 days, we had our first property. And it's just so obvious. When you look at it and you pull those cards out of that deck and you go, well, wait a minute, you mean you can do this? And because my parents were investors, but you know, I didn't really know how they invested and so forth. So we went out and we bought a bunch of actually single family homes. And then now I invest primarily in multifamily and commercial, but back then I was doing single family.
Nice. And were you doing those single family? Were you like buying them and managing them and doing everything yourself? Or did you hire?
No. I'm not good at managing anything. So I have hired property managers.
Of course. I love it, man. Well, that is a great arc. It sounds like, you know, you are the master in taxes, which is, I want to go into your actual, your trajectory of buying and you know where you are now with multifamily and commercial. But before we do that, I do really want to take some notes on the tax side of things, because you know you're the brain to pick here. So let's start with, you mentioned it earlier, LLCs, partnerships. LLCs, it's the only thing I've ever known to buy real estate and put it into an LLC, and that's what you do. I've heard a whole bunch of different opinions on how you should structure, the real estate acquisition, especially when you have multiple parties involved. Is an LLC, is that still the recommended route, or partnerships, or is how well, do you so, generally?
So for tax purposes, an LLC is a partnership.
Okay.
So we have to distinguish. I mean, there's legal partnerships like a limited partnership, general partnership, but then there's also a tax partnership. And an LLC is a partnership unless you choose to make it a corporation. And so an LLC doesn't have its own tax designation. You have to decide what an LLC is. In most states, LLCs tend to provide the best asset protection, right? That's why attorneys regularly tell you to put your real estate into an LLC, because the asset protection, because as we know, if you look up the word tenant in the dictionary, it actually says plaintiff right on it. That's the definition of a tenant, is a plaintiff. Huh. Just kidding. But okay. I always say, if you're in real estate, the question is not have you been sued? It's have you been sued yet? Because chances are you're going to be sued. So that's why you use LLCs. There are some states like Arizona where actually a limited partnership is even better than an LLC. But most states, LLCs. And then there's some states where an LLC is really troublesome, like California, it can be troublesome because of their $800 minimum tax. It can be troublesome in Tennessee. So it's not like a one size fits all type thing. This is where you need a team. This is where you have both an attorney and a CPA involved, because the attorney has the legal side and they're looking at the legal side of it, and the CPA should be looking at the tax side of it. So I like partnerships because A, it's easy to put property in and out of a partnership. There's no tax, no negative tax consequence of putting a property in or out of a partnership, like there is a corporation. And second of all, partnerships are the most flexible of the tax entities. And so I can specially allocate income, deductions. I can do things in a partnership that are much more difficult to do in a corporation. Now, you don't have all the nice, neat rules that you have in corporations, which some of us like that. You know, if you're in real estate, like you probably don't want nice, neat rules. If you're in real estate, if you want nice, neat rules, you'd be investing in an ETF in the stock market, right? So instead, you know, the people who are not, don't like things neat and tidy, but rather just like the flexibility, then they tend towards the partnerships. And like I said, an LLC with more than one member is by its the default is a partnership unless you make it something else. So I like partnerships. I love partnership from a tax standpoint, and I love partnership from the flexibility it gives you from a real estate standpoint.
Yep, that makes sense. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about selling real estate. You know, when you sell any asset, you have to take, recapture any tax deductions that you made over the course of that, of owning that asset. And I found, especially when I'm buying real estate, that one of the biggest hurdles that I have to get over with the seller is the tax, you know, the amount of taxes that they're going to have to pay on the sale. So I guess what is a good way, what is the best way for a seller of any real estate to sell their property, be it 1031, you know, DST, all these different options, seller financing? What's the best way for someone to do that? To reduce their tax burden, on the sale?
Well, so this is where both you and the seller need better tax advice, because you shouldn't be paying taxes when you sell real estate. Okay. So you think of the seller side. Okay, they're selling the property. What are they going to do with the money? That's the first question. What are you going to do with the money?
Right.
Well, are they just cashing it? And are they going to use the money personally? Or are they going to reinvest it? If they're going to reinvest it, what are they going to reinvest in? Let's say they say, okay, I'm retiring. I'm going to reinvest it in a bond. Well, why not reinvest it in a triple net lease, which is the equivalent of a corporate bond, right? Yeah. And if you reinvest in a triple net lease, you can do that in a 1031 exchange and not have to pay any tax on that exchange. That's a tax-free exchange. Today, we still have 80% bonus depreciation the first year this year. So a lot of times, actually, a 1031 exchange, the like kind where you don't recognize the gain, is worse than recognizing the gain and then taking the bonus depreciation on the new property. This is where your accountant needs to run the numbers, because I have people all the time tell me, well, I need to do a 1031 exchange. I'm going, why? Because I don't want to recognize the gain. I'm going, so you don't want to pay the 20% tax liability. That's right. Well, what if you could actually get a tax reduction by selling your real estate? So there are times, think about this. So depreciation, which is the magic of real estate, right? From a tax standpoint, depreciation is the magic. I write about chapter 7 of my book, Tax Free Wealth. I call it the magic of depreciation, because depreciation is supposedly for wear and tear, but your property can go up in value and still get depreciation, right?
Right. Yep.
But depreciation is an ordinary deduction, not a capital deduction. It's an ordinary deduction, which means it comes off your ordinary income tax rates. So let's say you're in a 35% tax bracket. Well, wouldn't you like to have a 35% tax deduction and only a 20% gain? Well, that's a pretty sweet exchange, right? That's actually a 15% swing in your favor.
Got you. I get it. So
the idea of always saying, you know, yeah, I can eliminate that 20% tax, but I'd rather eliminate 35% tax than 20% tax.
Right.
And so frequently you're actually better off given in the bonus, these bonus depreciation days. These are the heyday right now, real estate, because we've got still 80%. We had 100% last year. Next year, we'll down to 60%, 40%, 20%. So right now I would run numbers, because not always are you better off. I mean, let's say, for example, the seller, the early depreciation they took, let's say those were passive losses. Well, they carried over. Well, but the year that you sell the property, those passive losses offset that 35% income, but you're only paying 20% gain. So you literally reduce your taxes by recognizing the gain.
Interesting. Right. Because capital gains is a 20% tax. And if you're
maximum,
right. Oh, I didn't know it could be less than that. So
yeah, it can be zero. First 80,000 is zero.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, you've got tax brackets for capital gains, just like you do for ordinary income. They're just different tax brackets.
Interesting.
And so you can have 0%, you can have 15%, you can have 20%, you can get up to 23.8%. That's the highest rate. You're never going to get to 35 33, 35, 37% like, or 40% like you do in ordinary income.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So maximum, we'll just say 20 because it's a nice number. So if you use the 20% capital gains tax, what you're saying is it probably makes more sense to sell that $1 million property, take the $200,000, you know, hit that you would be taking, and then reinvest that $800,000 to get the 35%.
But you don't reinvest 800,000, reinvest $1 million. Okay. Okay. So follow me. All right.
Okay.
Why would you reinvest 800,000? You reinvest $1 million, you leverage it like you're going to do, right? You get bonus depreciation that's going to offset more than your gain.
Got you.
So okay. why would you only invest 800,000? Invest right. the whole million.
Right. Because when, you're on tax day, they're not, yeah, they don't need to see money from the sale, the 20% from the sale. They look at the aggregate.
Money's fungible.
Right. Right. Huh. Interesting. That makes a lot of sense. Kind of blowing my mind right now. So I'm going to have to sit on that one and think about it. But it does make a lot of sense. One other question that I wanted to ask is the benefit of, I've heard deferred sales trusts and 1031s are the two main vehicles that you can use to sell your property with tax deductions.
Well, you're probably talking about Delaware statutory trust,
okay,
a DST, which is really just a way to do a 1031 on a multi-owner property where not everybody wants to do it. You can also do a drop and swap, Gabe, where you actually drop the assets out to you, to the investors, and the investors sell their basically tenancy and common interest. And then some investors get to do a 1031, others don't. But a DST, which is a Delaware statutory trust, that allows you basically to do a tenancy in common type of an arrangement without doing a tenancy in common legal documents, which can be a little cumbersome. So that's why people use the DSTs. They use them so they can do the 1031 exchange. Okay. But again, it's still a 1031 exchange. So there are multiple ways to a 1031 exchange. I've done 1031 exchanges. You can do a reverse 1031 exchange, Gabe. You can actually buy the new property before you sell the old property and still get the 1031. There's so many things you can do with selling real estate. Again, some people should never sell the real estate at all. They should just go get another loan on it, go refinance it, because loans aren't taxable.
Yep.
Or they had to exchange it for a different type of property because, again, triple net lease, they might not want to be in apartments anymore, but they go, all I want is mailbox money. I just want a check coming in. I don't want to deal with the property. I want nothing to do with it. Well, good. Go buy Walgreens.
Yep.
Walgreens. I mean, you can go online. You can find Walgreens all over the place. You can find a Wendy's. You can find a Safeway. You can find a Walmart. You can find all these different triple net leases. Why not get, I mean, they're better. They're as good a creditor as the U.S. government. Why are you putting it in a treasury bond when you could put it into a Walgreens lease?
Yep. Yep. That makes
sense. And not pay tax.
Yep. So my brain is still caught on the earlier subject. While we were talking about that, my mind was just churning. You mentioned that currently we're kind of going, the ability to take your deduction at a higher rate is diminishing over the next couple of years. You said 100%, 80%, 60%. So does that mean that when, just walk me through that. I don't want to put my words onto this because butcher it.
So. I'll simplify it. I'll make it really simple for you. So the regular rule is when you buy a property, you're really buying four things. You're buying the land, the building, the contents, and the land improvements.
Yep.
Historically, buildings get depreciated over anywhere from 27 to 39 years, depending on whether they're residential or commercial. Land improvements get depreciated over 15 years, which is twice the depreciation rate. And then contents get depreciated over 5 years, which is, three times the depreciation rate of land improvements. So that's the normal rules. Those aren't ever going away. So yeah. That's the good news. The good news is once bonus depreciation ends, we'll be back to where we were in 2017, which is normal depreciation, which is still good.
Yeah.
Okay. As long as we do that cost segregation to separate out those four categories of property, what we have right now is the land improvements and the contents, instead of being 15 years and 5 years, 80% of that cost is 1 year. It's the first year.
Interesting.
So if you, let's say you bought $1 million property, and let's say that $100,000 was attributable to land improvements and $200,000 was attributable to contents. It's about the right ratio. Okay. Well, that's $300,000. So that means the first year you'd get 80% of that, or $240,000, as a deduction in the first year.
Got you.
Okay. The other $60,000, you're going to spread over 5 and 15 years.
Right.
But you're still going to get, you know, the 3.5% or 2.5 to 3.5% on the building, which is typically 50-60% of your cost. You're going to get your regular depreciation on what's left over of that bonus, but you'll get 80% of whatever that combination is of land improvements and contents, and you get that today.
Okay.
The day you place it in service.
And this bonus depreciation, this is the ability for us to do this is going away, essentially. It's
phasing out. So it's phasing out. We were at 100% last year. We're at 80% this year. Next year it'll be 60. Year after that, 40, 20, and zero, assuming that Congress doesn't change it, which, you know, you have to assume, as long as the current administration is the administration, it's not going to change.
Right.
It's a pretty big, I mean, it's a really generous benefit to real estate investors. No other country has this benefit on used property, real estate. So, we probably should consider ourselves pretty lucky for the 10 years it's been in
place. It's a cherry on top that's been there. Exactly. And while it's here, we might as well take advantage of it. So anything you buy this year gets that 80% of the appreciation. Makes sense. All right, man, my head is spinning. This tax stuff, it always gets it that way. So I took a peek at the clock. We're running it down. I want to move over to the active side of real estate. So you mentioned you started in a single family. You got into multi-commercial. Tell me about that transition. At what point did you switch over? What did you decide to buy as your first investment? And why was that your choice?
Well, I decided that what I'm really good at is business. Yeah. I'm not really good at real estate. And I know this is like heresy, but I don't love real estate. I mean, I like the tax benefits of real estate and I like the investment of real estate, but I really like business.
Yeah.
So I want to put my efforts into business. And so what I've done, of course, outside of the real estate that I own for my business, which of course I own my own building, and I have solar panels on my building because I got both a credit and a deduction for those solar panels.
All right.
My building. So don't forget that one, folks. But other than that, most of my investments are syndication. So I'm letting somebody else handle this. I'm long been an accredited investor, so I can let somebody else do the work. They can take half the benefit. The investors get all the tax benefit. The developer gets half of the financial benefit. Typically, the investor gets the other half of the financial benefit, and the investor gets all of the tax benefit. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good situation to run. You decided to do an LP, so you decided to be an LP in multifamily and commercial. Is there something that drew you to that? Do you underwrite them yourself when you choose your projects? What kind of got you into that?
And I will tell you, I own mine through an LLC. I don't use a limited partnership. I use an LLC, and I just know that there are some people like limited partnerships.
Yeah.
I'm fine with the LLC. It's sufficient for me, because remember, I'm owning as an LLC, but I'm also invested in another LLC or limited partnership. So I've got a couple of layers of protection there. I don't do anything. I read my investment statements. They direct deposit my checks. I'm not interested in being actively involved in the day-to-day operations. I'm frankly not good at it.
Yeah.
And I can hire other people to do that, and they do it very well.
Well, you got to know your strengths and you got to stick to them. That's how you make it far. But I mean, you still got to choose who you're investing with.
You do.
Still have to choose the GP that you're going to be investing with.
You do. And that's the hardest part. I think you have to do two things. First of all, you have to decide what type of investing you're going to do. And I think you ought to be very specific and very focused. So I know you mentioned that you do a lot of self-storage. Great. Then you become an expert in self-storage. There are other people do a lot of multifamily. They became experts in multifamily. Other people do back office. They become experts in back office. What I always tell people to shy away from is don't try to do all of it. You know, pick one, right? And they all make money if you've got good people running them, but pick one. And then pick, you're right. It's the team behind it that makes the investment. All real estate is good and all real estate's bad.
Yep. it's a good way to look at it.
It's just that some operators are good, some are great, and some are horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And sticking, I feel like it's really good advice if you want to be a GP, if you want to go out there and do your own deals, to choose one asset and go for it, because so easy to get whatever the shiny object syndrome and want to jump into multifamily, mobile home parks, self-storage, industrial, all the different types out there. But then you'll never get good at one, and each asset class requires its own special touch.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's just like, so I specialize in real estate tax, right? It's a very complex area of the tax law. I will tell you, most syndicated real estate deals, the tax return is done incorrectly. I would say at least 80% of them are done incorrectly.
I believe it.
and to the detriment of the investors. And so, you know, I'm a specialist. I'm a specialist in even in tax. You know, you think of tax as special, but no, I'm especially within the tax area. So I think you want to, you know, they always say a niche will make you rich, right? And I particularly think that is true in real estate.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, hey, that wraps it up for the regular portion of this podcast. We do have to move on to the quick question round. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Starts with books or any form of education. I want two recommendations. Give me one for general life wisdom and then one for real estate specific.
Well, from a real estate specific, I'd say Selling from Your Comfort Zone.
Okay.
Is a really good book. I interviewed the author on my podcast, The Wealth Builder Show, and she did a great, it's a terrific book. We're studying it internally in my company. So it's Selling from Your Comfort Zone. And that's important for real estate, of course, because you've always got to be selling either to your investors or to your tenants, right? And then the other one I love is the Dan Sullivan book, Who Not How, which goes to your comment about the team. Right. You don't have to know how to do everything. You just need to know who to do it.
Yep. Absolutely. Selling from Your Comfort Zone. I actually haven't heard about that one. That sounds interesting.
It's a good one. Of course, there's my new book, The Win-Win Wealth Strategy, which of course is the best book because it actually tells you how to make money while reducing your taxes.
Perfect. Right. And where, if somebody wanted to pick that up, where would they go to find it?
Best way to go is Amazon. It's a bestseller on Amazon.
So. Of course. The classic. All right, I'm going to move us on to the next question. And this one is going to be for your younger self. So let's go back to the Tom who was, you know, watching his parents do those duplexes, triplexes. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Leave your job earlier.
All right. I like it. And that, you know, that sentiment has been echoed across many different episodes. You know, so many people, once they get into real estate, they just wish they had started earlier.
Yeah, and, for me, it was leaving it for business, right? It wasn't even leaving it for real estate. I just going, you know, some people are really good at being an employee and that's not me. I'm unemployable and should have left long before I did. So that would be the first thing I'd say. Don't worry about it. Just do it.
Make the leap. Get out there. All right. That leads us to the next question. And this is about your business. You know, every business is run on the people that run the business. And so we're not talking about individuals here. We're just talking about positions. But give me the first three positions you hired for in your business. What are they? And would you do it differently if you did it today?
Well, interestingly enough, by chance, my my partner, who's been my partner now for 21 years, she's basically a systems expert. Okay. So I lucked into that.
Yeah.
Frankly. But that would be one of the first, because I'm not a systems guy. She's phenomenal at systems. And I think systems was clearly important. We actually hired somebody, a very key person for us was somebody to help us develop education curriculum. So okay. We learned very early on that the best way to market and sell is to educate people. And so we actually, back when you were doing DVDs for education, we were doing DVDs for education. So
love it.
We actually, that person was very important. And then, for me, it was actually a coach to, help me speak. And I am very fortunate that my very first and best coach has been Robert Kiyosaki. I've been on stage all over the world with him. So nice. You cannot get a better mentor, one-on-one than Robert Kiyosaki. I'm very, very fortunate.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a good way to start right there. So a coach for public speaking, educational curriculum developer, it sounds like, content creator. Yep. And then, you know, your partner, you lucked out with her. She helped build out the system. So great partners to help get your business off and running. I'm going to move us on to the next one. And this is, you know, I know you do a limited partner investing, but it's still relevant to today. You know, the United States is a big place. There's a lot of square miles out there. Yep. So what is the metro you're most excited about investing in today?
Oh, well, any metro area where the government is lowering taxes and reducing regulations. So I truly believe that, you know, so not Seattle, not Oregon, not Portland, not San Francisco, not New York. Not New Jersey, you know, these places where the government thinks that price controls, rent controls, not being able to kick people out. I mean, they make real estate really, really, really hard. So, you know, where you're talking about Texas, Florida, Arizona. I mean, Arizona recently reduced their income tax rates. You've got other Western states, Southern states. You got Midwestern states that have reduced their taxes. So there's actually a lot more states than what people think. People typically think Florida and Texas, and I know those are hot spots, but there are lots of other states that are having growth. Idaho having massive, massive employment growth. And they're very much a Western state. So Utah, massive, yeah. Massive employment growth.
Even
and
Oklahoma has been doing
Oklahoma. Well. Absolutely. So there are actually a lot more good states. I have a lot of clients with a lot in Indiana.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Indiana, Wisconsin, there's some good Midwestern states there.
Yeah, absolutely. We just bought a self-storage facility out in Indianapolis.
There you go.
I had never been out there before, but I was pleasantly surprised. It was a nice city. Moving us on to the next question. And I lost my spot. It happens every time. There it is. All right. So this is about mentors. We've already mentioned it, but none of us are islands. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. Mm. So give a shout out to one mentor of yours who has contributed significantly to your career today.
That would certainly be Robert Kiyosaki. He's my mentor. And I mean, financial education, speaking, writing. He's the one who got me to write my first bestseller, Tax-Free Wealth. He's done forwards for both of my books. He's pretty transparent. And I think a mentor who's transparent is really important. And I think that's what I like most about Robert. And then also, by the way, his wife, Kim, is no slouch herself. Yeah. She's a terrific mentor herself. So,
all right. Well, that is a great mentor to have, as I said. So shout out to Robert for getting Tom to where he is today. Moves us to the second to last question. We are all given gifts that we uniquely give this world. So what is your Superman strength?
I call it my stupid people trick. I can actually look at somebody's tax situation in about 5 minutes and tell them what they need to do. So I simplify. My superhuman strength is simplicity, which is why Tax-Free Wealth, Win-Win Wealth Strategy are such They're simple books to read. I like taking a complex subject, making it really simple, really interesting, a lot of fun. So it would be Simplify.
Perfect. That leads us to the last question. And this is for the listeners. You've given us a lot of things to think about. I'm sure people want to reach out, learn more about what you guys do, what you offer. So what do you guys offer, and where's the best place for people to go to get in contact with you?
Best place to go is wealthability.com. Just like it sounds, WealthAbility. We're actually a company that believes in your ability to create your own wealth, not having to rely on somebody else. So we actually have education. My podcast is the WealthAbility Show. My books are Tax-Free Wealth and the Win-Win Wealth Strategy, both very simple education books, both on Amazon or in any bookstore. They're both very well known. And anything we can do, we will actually look at your tax return and give you an idea if we think it's well done or not, like I did with Donald Trump's. Not well done, by the way, just FYI, pretty sloppy. But we will look at your tax return. We'll do that analysis for free. So if you call us at schedule appointment at wealthability.com, we'll do a free analysis of your tax return.
All right, perfect. That is a big benefit for anybody who wants to take advantage of that one, because I switched tax guys a couple of years ago, and I realized that, well, I was starting an H&R Block, which is, you know, no offense to them, but they're not specialists. And when I moved over, it was a big difference. So it sounds like a really good opportunity there for people to take advantage of. That is wealthability.com. I will put that URL in the show notes. So awesome. If y'all want to reach out to Tom and get in contact with you, just go ahead and click a little more in the description. It'll pull down the full description, and in there is Tom's URL. Yeah,
and just know we have a network of 65 CPA firms around the country. So we'll get you in the right spot.
There you go. All right, Tom, that wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thanks, Gabe.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe, at realestateinvestingclub.com. And if you guys want to support the show, all we ask is you give us a like, subscribe, share, all that jazz. It's the best way to give us a hand up. Other than that, I hope you guys have an absolutely fantastic week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out, and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.